everybody, and welcome to this week's Mostly Mets podcast. The Mets actually had a pretty decent week leading up to this show, so we get to talk about some solid results in San Francisco for the most part, and then in St. Louis as the Mets now get ready to go home and take on a rather weak Philadelphia Phillies team. Seth Everett of NBC Sports Radio is going to join me here in just a little bit. You probably know Seth. He worked with the Mets on WOR a couple of years ago. He's certainly been around baseball for a long, long time, so looking forward to talking to him. Before we get to Seth, a quick programming note to listen to all of SNY.TV's original podcasts covering the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, or college basketball and recruiting. Just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network. And please rate and review our channel. And definitely check out this week's Mets Blog Q&A cast. Matt Cerrone checks in with WABC radio host Sid Rosenberg to talk about the Mets, their chances in 2016, the difference between covering politics and sports, and Sid's relationship with Doc Gooden. Doc was obviously in the news quite a bit this week. So that's a great Q&A cast. Make sure you check that out. So again, the Mets played pretty decent baseball in San Francisco. They wind up splitting a four-game series there. They take two out of three when they go to St. Louis. It would have been nice to get that sweep, go home just 1.5 games out of the second wild card spot as is. They're going home 3.5 games out, but still very much in the race. And I think our next guest, Seth Everett, is going to give us some great input on what he thinks the Mets are capable of doing down the stretch and handicapping the race with some of the other squads. Nobody right now looks all that great. So really looking forward to getting Seth's opinion on it and his impressions of what he saw over the week in baseball as a whole. So without further ado, we welcome in Seth Everett, baseball insider for NBC Sports Radio. Seth, how are you?
Robert, it is always great to hang with you. I just miss the days sitting next to you in the press box talking for 3 hours.
I know. I was thinking back the last time we were probably in the press box together. It was obviously your time when you were working at WOR, and yeah. I think it might have been in L.A. I remember we sat next to each other for quite a long time in L.A. And yet those were great times.
We had some good times there. Yeah,
we did. So now
You still owe me a couple of beers, but other than that,
well, that's no surprise. I owe probably half the country a couple of beers, I think, at this point. So now you're at NBC Sports Radio.
Yeah.
And Westwood One stuff, and I know we were just talking before we started recording this that you were doing some Olympic stuff. Give everybody a little bit of a breakdown of what you're up to.
Oh, it was a great experience, you know, working the Olympics for Westwood One. It's really funny. I was with the Seattle Mariners in 2000 when Westwood One and I first started our relationship, and they had asked me to go to Sydney. And, Robert, you can appreciate this because I was chicken, and I was afraid not to go abroad, but I was afraid some yim-yam was going to take my Mariners gig. So I didn't want to go, and it's always been one of my big regrets. So getting a chance to cover the Olympics was really neat. You know, we go to school for broadcast journalism, and, you know, I've covered baseball for 20 years, and I love the sport, but there is nothing like covering 17 events at the same time.
Yeah.
It's not just track and field. It was six different races. It wasn't just swimming. It was four different heats. It was There was so much at once that you really had to, you know, worry about every second on the air. And I thought that was the fascinating thing. People are saying to me, you know, was it about the Olympics? It's not. I'm very pro-Olympics, but I don't get into it. I don't get caught up in it. This was impossible not to get caught up in.
Are you one of those people that's an every 4 years kind of guy, though, when it comes to those sports, the Olympic sports?
Well, I will say that the sports that turned me off were the golf and tennis, and I'm a huge tennis person.
Yeah.
I just thought that, you know, I know the players, you know, say otherwise, but I just thought the amount of players that chose not to participate, I just think that they have plenty of competition global. And I don't think that adding it as an Olympic sport it enhances the Olympics in any way. The gymnastics is fascinating. It's a freaky thing to watch. And even though you know the results, because, you know, don't forget, the gymnastics events were in the afternoon. So I was watching it live, being at Westwood One, and then I would come back with my family and watch it on tape delay. And there, you have to watch it. Even if you know who wins, it still doesn't tell the story, which I think is a unique thing to a sport where if you know the end result of the Met game, what do you need to see it for?
Right,
and
right.
Did you see a double play? No, it's not the same as like a twisted axle or whatever they call it. I just thought the uniqueness of what it was going on live. You know, it's funny, I'm going to be working in 2018. I hear, what breaking news. I'm going to be working the Winter Games in 2018, and that's all going to be taking place in the middle of the night because it's in Korea.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a very different experience than what it was like in Rio. I really, as a first-timer, that was a really unique thing.
That's great. Well, I'm glad you got to enjoy that. And, of course, baseball, as you mentioned, is coming back to the Olympics next time around.
Which by the way, I'm not in favor of. I think it's kind of silly. I don't see the value. I understand that for, you know, young players that are in minor league systems, it's a chance to get extra competition, whereas it beats the minor league season. But I've been against the World Baseball Classic for a number of years, ever since its inception. I've been told by enough general managers that if they had their druthers, they would literally tell every player not to go.
Yeah.
And I have trouble getting into the enthusiasm. Look, if you're covering swimming, everything is for the Olympics. If you're a baseball player, everything is about the regular season and ultimately the baseball postseason. So to tell me that you're going to play a preseason spring training-esque tournament with pitch count limits and all this stuff, I would literally tell, if I'm a fan of a team, every American, and you're not anti-American by saying this, you care about your team first and your country second when it comes to baseball.
Yeah.
You'd rather have the Orioles win or, you know, if
right,
you're
it doesn't
a
really
Dodger
matter who's fan. On the team, yeah.
Right. The idea is, if your team loses 100 games, it's not a good season because America won the World Baseball Classic.
No, understood completely. And, Bo, by the way, players can also get hurt. And so, speaking of injuries, it's a perfect segue, Seth, because we talked about this a little bit online, I remember, about a month ago when the Mets were going through all these injuries, and it just seems like it's persisted constantly. And even yesterday, you got a guy like Seth Lugo who comes in. He's doing a nice job filling in as a starter. He's had his second start. He actually pitched well in San Francisco.
Great first name.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I know you love that. And then he also goes to St. Louis and he pitches well against a decent Cardinals team. And then he even gets hurt and has to leave in the sixth inning because of a calf strain. He had DeGrom the day before. I know you said that this happens all the time in baseball, but have you really seen this many injuries piling up on team after team? It's not just the Mets, the Dodgers too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it happens all the time. I mean, there are teams that are just besieged by injuries. I know when you get caught up in the rigmarole, I mean, I can remember teams that I covered. The 98 Rockies had a ton of injuries. I mean, it happens. It's one of those things. It's unfortunate. You can't plan for it. You try to have your guys be as in tip-top shape as much as possible. The thing that is frustrating, I think, for fans are muscle strains as opposed to broken arms. You know, I always use Ken Griffey Jr. as the barometer, and that's really not fair. Ken Griffey Jr. would dive into the wall and break his arm. That's not an injury where you say, man, he's injury-prone. You know,
that's not that kind of thing.
And so the quads, I know Cespedes had the quad injury, and I know, you know, Darno's had muscle strains. I think those kinds of things frustrate fans because you just wonder whether or not they could have been prevented.
So with all that said, this Mets team is still 3.5 games out of that second wild card. They're hanging around. They're a game above 500 as we record today on Friday. They're coming home. They're playing a very weak Phillies team, although they haven't played well against them for whatever reason this year. But they are going to play a weak Phillies team over the weekend. Where do you see the Mets right now in terms of their chances at getting into one of those wild card spots?
But I was joking with your producer. I think the fact that we're even having this conversation is a great advocacy for the second wild card. We're doing some renovations in our house, and I was going through some stuff to try to make some space, and I found some old cassettes from 1997, and I swear to you, Robert, in 1997, if I had a cassette player, I would find this audio. When the wild card was introduced in 95, in 97, I was hosting a talk show, and I swear to you, I said, if you're going to have one wild card, you need to have two, because there needs to be the emphasis back on the division race. And what the wild card does is it serves two things. For example, the NL West race is alive and well because even though the loser will get the wild card game, neither one wants it. And that's fascinating. And then there's the idea that you have teams that would be literally ending their season. They would be abandoning their campaign that they are alive for the remote hope of playing one game one time to get to the postseason.
Right.
And I like the way general managers have changed their focus. You will break the bank to build a team that's one player away from a division. You will not do the same thing for the wild card. When the Mets acquired Jay Bruce, that was not for the wild card. That was to catch Washington. If that is abandoned, then the wild card literally just keeps you alive.
Well, then you have a team like the Pittsburgh Pirates that's ahead of the Mets that wound up kind of sort of selling at the deadline,
sure.
Right? They trademark Melanson away, and they have Tony Watson, who's done an okay job as their closer now, but really they traded away their best relief pitcher, and yet they're still kind of hanging in it, but their fan base is completely upset. They're pissed. How do you give up on a chance?
Yeah, you know, but the thing is that it's a chance, but it's such a remote chance. I see this, and you know, I made a joke in Pittsburgh. If you want to talk about people got annoyed, this I had fun with this on Twitter because I made fun of the Pirates for selling T-shirts for the wild card game. You're not in. It's like the 65th team in the NCAA tournament. You're not in. The postseason starts with the NLDS and the ALDS. That wild card game is an entry game. As a matter of fact, I believe the statistics count in the regular season numbers. And I think that what happens with regard to that 163, this idea that you're still alive, I think it's great for a team like Miami. I think it's fantastic. And I think it would be great if the Mets could do it because they do have shutdown capability. The question then would become is, if you have to play in to the last weekend just to secure the chance for the spot to be in the wild card game, your starter for said wild card game then will become whoever's turn it is in the rotation.
Right.
And that changes everything. You mentioned Seth Lugo. What if Seth Lugo is pitching for the season?
Yeah,
what if Bartolo Colon is pitching for the season? I don't want Bartolo. If the New York Mets are playing for in a postseason game or a quasi-postseason game, you want one of the young studs to get all the Bonesburg guys to throw in the wild card game. Because that to me is the way, you know, a franchise goes out. Go out with your best. I mean, I love that Dallas Keuchel pitched last year for the Astros in the wild card game. That got them into the postseason. That's when you and the champagne popping. There should be no champagne popping if the New York Mets clinch the second wild card.
Really even shouldn't be if you win that first division round, in my opinion, too. But I'm with you on that. I completely agree. They definitely should not celebrate at that point. Let me ask you this. I'm sure you caught up on what was going on with the Mets and the Cardinals series. That was a relatively big series over the week, not just for the Mets, but also for St. Louis, a team that is battling injuries, too. They're without Matt Holliday for the rest of the season. It's not really a great offensive club to begin with, and you lose that bopper in the middle. Are you underwhelmed by St. Louis like I am? I really don't think they're a very good team, and right now they hold that second wild card spot.
Right. They've been very un-Cardinal-like. What was it, last night? Again, we're taping this on Friday, but last night they had 500 runs given. I mean, for them.
Yeah. They have the most errors, I think, in the National League
Mets
this year.
Mets know how to take a gift. I think the Cardinals, they just don't look like the Cardinals. You know what I mean? I always look at the Cardinals and saying that they are an epitome of fundamentals in an organization. They're not. They don't look like a great team. But neither do the Mets, neither the Pirates, neither the Marlins. And,
right.
You know, the one thing I'll say, if I'm more positive on any of them, it's Miami because I thought Miami would be better. I didn't know that necessarily that they would win the West or anything like that, but my instinct would always tell you that I like what the Marlins are building. I've said that all along. I like who their manager is. I like the veterans that they have on their team. I adore Jose Fernandez. I can watch this guy.
Yeah.
He is literally the only pitcher, and I've said this since 2013, he is the only pitcher that I will literally set my DVR to record.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And that includes, you know, all the Cubs pitchers, Arrieta, Kershaw. Jose Fernandez is just, he's as good as they come. And, you know, I heard Don Mattingly joking about the wild card because somebody asked him about the chances, and he said, oh, and I'll have Jose that day, right? On full rest, right?
Well, you never know because at this point, you saw his last start. He was amazing, and then he comes out with a calf injury. And I don't know what it is about calf injuries this last week. He's downplaying it. The team is downplaying it. Even if he's healthy, Seth, do you see the Marlins as being a legitimate threat? I mean, they're going to have no Giancarlo Stanton. Conley's been on the DL now for about a week and a half. I assume he's ready to come off at some point in the near future. But without Giancarlo, are they really capable?
capable of what, the second wild card? Sure.
At the very least, making the wild card.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if that's all we're talking about, you can have 85 wins and be a good baseball team and get that second wild card. We're not asking the Marlins to win 90 games.
Right.
You know, there's a chance that 82 wins gets the second wild card. If you're barely over 500, are you a champion? Look, if you win the wild card game and get into the division series and win the division series, go to the LCS, win the LCS, go to the World Series, look, I'll read the book that somebody writes about them. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
No, I
but,
hear you.
But that's not, you know, the question that you asked is, are they good enough? No, none of these teams are good enough. Lou Piniella taught me one of my favorite phrases in all of baseball, and it literally applies to this time of year every year. At this point in the season, you don't have to be good. You just have to win.
Right.
And that's all this takes. No one looks at the warts on your roster any longer. No one says you're not a deep enough team. Nobody talks about the unbalance of your lineup. You are talking about the NL wild card and four really mediocre teams.
All right, so four mediocre teams. Who gets it? What's the wild card prediction? The two
if
teams
I have to predict... And
yeah.
I'm on SNY podcast?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm taking Miami.
Okay, fair enough. So Miami gets the second wild card, I assume, and you think the National League West loser gets the other one, right?
I would think, and I think the Giants take the Dodgers. This is the same logic on, you know, at this point in the season, you don't have to be good, you just have to win. Like,
right.
There really should be no reason why the Dodgers have even overtaken the Giants. The Giants, Jeff Samardzija, and I'm not just picking on him, but Jeff Samardzija's ERA went from 3-3 to 4-2 in this stretch. The Giants can't buy victories. And I know they won yesterday, but, you know, and they almost threw a no-hitter. The Giants are a better team on paper. And you don't win this on paper. But if we're doing this in late August, I'm going to say San Francisco wins the NL West and Toronto wins the AL East.
Interesting. Even though the Giants have been so bad as of late. I hear you. They will bounce back. The talent will overcome, and the Dodgers are
usually in a marathon. Yeah, usually in a marathon, the cream rises to the top. But,
yeah.
You know, again, it's not a marathon anymore. It's just a sprint.
All right. Understood. All right. So before we recorded today as well, we were talking a little bit about a relocation idea that you had. So I'm really curious what this is.
All right, it's a story about a vacation, but it's an interesting analysis, and here's what it was. I went to beautiful, and I'd never been there before. I'd never even heard of it, so you call me ignorant if you want, but I'd never been to Rehoboth Beach in Delaware, and it was amazing. It's a gorgeous place, and there I saw, now don't forget, I was there the week that the Orioles were playing the Nationals. And I saw, and I am not exaggerating, 99% Nationals memorabilia. I saw Strasburg shirts. I saw Harper stuff, hats, all kinds of stuff. I might have seen one Orioles bumper sticker.
Huh.
And
in Delaware.
In order to get from Rehoboth Beach to Washington, D.C., you have to go through Maryland.
Yeah.
I found that fascinating. And here's the story. I covered, when I was working for MLB, I covered the Expos moving to Washington. And if you remember, Peter Angelos, the owner of the Orioles, had a chance to block for territorial rights. And his fear was that the casual fan would move to the Nationals. He was right.
Huh.
And that's the thing. Like, I never thought on a broadcast or a podcast or anywhere I would literally say the words, Peter Angelos was right. His worst fear. Now, the story goes, and the reason why it's relevant is the story went was the reason Peter Angelos acquiesced and allowed for this particular situation, he was paid. The Orioles get a percentage of the Mid-Atlantic Sports Network money. So if the Nationals do well in ratings and they sell a lot of sponsors, the Orioles get a huge chunk of that.
Something they've been fighting over now, right, for years.
Right, now they're fighting over. But that was 10 years ago. The Giants have blocked the Oakland A's from moving from Oakland to San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same reason. That's the same argument.
Right.
And what the Giants' contention has been is that you do not want the A's to become the popular team. Right now, they're in Oakland. They play in a place that's garbage. And it's literally garbage because I'm not even making fun of them. There's a plumbing issue and crap backs up there. I mean, it's a joke of a ballpark.
But isn't the difference, though, Seth, that the Giants have an identity already, though, that's so strong in the Bay Area? I guess both teams do to a certain degree.
But the Orioles did, too. I mean, I remember growing up in Jersey, I remember the Orioles and the value of the Orioles. So I understand the argument. I just think this is what the Giants are trying to protect again. I'm not saying that my stance changes because, to me, my stance has always been that Rob Manfred should lock the Giants and A's in a room, Peter McGowan, Lewis Wolf, and just not let them out until they come up with some dollar figure that will allow them, the A's, to proceed and be a real team. Because, you know, they're like Pinocchio. They're not a real boy.
Or at the very least, they need to let them build a new ballpark right where they stand right now. I mean, that parking lot's huge, isn't it? Couldn't they just put something else there?
Well, the problem is public money. I mean, the other counties will pay and Oakland County won't. So I understand, yes, in theory it is. It's the place is a disaster. And yet, I've never saw it from the Orioles' perspective before. I was stunned by how many people were Washington. And you can say, well, that's Steven Strasburg, that's Bryce Harper. Okay, that's fine. That's the reason why they didn't want the Expos to move there in the first place.
Yeah, no, makes complete sense to me. I love it. Seth, we can catch you on, I know, NBC Sports Radio. Are there times specifically that you're on there?
Well, I host a Sunday night show. That's been a lot of fun. I go on all the time. The best thing I would say is if you were ever a fan of my work, which, you know, all three of you already do, but you can follow me on Twitter. I post all my stuff. I own two podcasts. I host two podcasts. One's called Sports with Friends, which is a lot of fun. I just have my buddies on and we goof around, and some of those guys are pretty famous. And then I do a comic book podcast, which has done pretty well, too. We interview movie directors and actors and such and the like. So, you know, it's a lot of fun. I'm a big believer in podcasts, and I love my time at SNY.
Outstanding. And also on Twitter, right?
Twitter. Yeah, that's the best way. I mean, I promote all the crap that I do.
And it's at Seth Everett? Is that what it is?
No, it's not. You know what? That guy scares me. It's at Seth _ Everett. The guy who has the no underscore, he tweets a lot of scary stuff. And he had like 35 followers, and I knew six of them.
Does he claim to be you?
No, he doesn't claim to be me. He does his own thing. But the funny part about it is if you look at his followers, I knew six of them. So they clearly think they're following me.
Whoops. Well, if they couldn't tell by all the stuff he's tweeting as compared to what you would tweet.
I know, right?
Maybe they're not such great friends.
Seth, yeah, exactly. He's not representative of me.
It was awesome to catch up with you. I know it has been way, way too long. So the next baseball game, I promise, when we're sitting in the stands, beers are on me. 100%.
Sounds like a plan. Anytime you pay me in beers, I'm good. I'm game.
That's all it takes. All right, Seth. Have a good one.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Seth Everett, and really, I wasn't joking. I think the last time that Seth and I got together was at a Dodger game, and it was probably 2 or 3 years ago when Seth had his 1 year with the Mets doing the pregame and postgame hosting with WOR, and we really could sit there for hours and BS about baseball. The guy has been around for such a long time. He knows the game. He loves the game, and really happy for all of his success and being able to work at NBC Sports Radio in Westwood One. That's fantastic, so if you have a chance, listen to his podcast, catch him on the radio. Again, he does a fantastic job with all of the great stuff at NBC Sports. So that'll do it for us on the Mostly Mets podcast this week. Again, the Mets are 3.5 games out as we record today on Friday. They've got a legitimate chance over the weekend to beat up on a pretty bad Phillies team. And hopefully when we're recording sometime next week, the Mets are even a little bit closer to the Cardinals or whoever is leading the wild card, at least the second wild card at that point, because as we said a number of times during this podcast, nobody in the race is all that great. So there is still a legitimate chance that the Mets could get one of these wild card spots. All the injuries aside, they are right there in the mix with about a month and a half to go. That'll do it again for the Mostly Mets podcast. Thanks again to Seth Everett. Thanks to the guys in the studio. We'll see you next week.
This has been the Mostly Mets podcast, part of the SNY.TV audio network.